Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Food Friday, August 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. Today we talk farm-to-table dining with Matt Strauss of Heirloom Lodge, a 70-seat dinner restaurant in an 18th-century colonial in Housatonic, Massachusetts. Matt is a founding editor of Kitchen Work magazine, and in 2023, he helped establish the Kitchen Work Foundation, a nonprofit company established to encourage the production of more fresh, local, delicious food. If you have a question for Matt Strauss today, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Matt Strauss, Farm to Table, and you coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Food Friday, and today we welcome Matt Strauss of Heirloom Lodge in Housatonic, Massachusetts. After earning a culinary degree at the Pacific Institute of Culinary Arts in Vancouver, Matt moved to San Fran, opened Heirloom Cafe in 2010. In 24, he opened Heirloom Lodge in the Berkshires. He describes the menu as a culinary intersection of a rustic ingredient, fruit, and vegetable-driven approach to cooking at classical European cuisine. He's the founding editor of Kitchen Work magazine and the director of the Kitchen Work Foundation. He has twice been named one of food and wine's best sommeliers. So he knows a little bit about the vino, too. So if you have a question about that, you can also call 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you wish. Matt Strauss, welcome to the show.
Ray, it's such a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Your story is an interesting one. So you started here in the East, then went west, and then came back east.
That's right.
When you were a kid, did you have any inkling that you would be involved in the food service industry?
I really did. Yeah. I mean, when you're 8 years old, it's hard to imagine yourself. You can't picture yourself actually operating a restaurant. But I had, let's say I was attracted to the table when I was eight.
Really?
Yeah, quite.
What really got you?
I think it was a combination. So probably the most obvious combination is that on one hand, I really like to eat.
Right.
And on the
Most kids do.
A lot of kids like to eat. And on the second, I have recollections of sitting with my family around a dining room table. There'd be 10 or 12 of us. And I loved the conversation. I loved the conversation in the middle of the meal. I loved the conversation after the meal. It just seemed there was something that I loved about it.
How old were you when you started critiquing the cooking of your elders?
Gosh, not until I was a teenager, probably.
Really? But you critique everything at that.
But when I was a teenager, I'm sure I did do that.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
You know, then you went west.
I did.
You didn't go specifically for food, did you, back then?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I was actually, I went to college up the road here at Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs. And I spent a couple of years bouncing around trying to figure out what I wanted to do.
Yep.
I was very focused on theater and performing when I was at Skidmore. And for a few years after I graduated, I thought maybe I would be interested in trying to figure out how to get into theater. When I went to Los Angeles, which is where I landed when I was in my mid-20s, I think in the back of my mind I was thinking I might audition. The only real professional pull I felt at that point was food. And so I landed in Los Angeles and started looking for work. And the first job that I landed in L.A. was what turned out to be maybe the most important job of my life, which was working as a server at a restaurant called Campanile, which is on La Brea Avenue in Los Angeles. And I was, from that moment on, after working at Campanile, I was completely hooked on not only on restaurants, but specifically on a certain style of food and also on wine.
You know, it's so funny at such a young age to get the bug. You well know now from being sort of in charge of things that either you have that bug or you don't. And people wash out very quickly. And just like so many other careers, restaurant will eat you up.
I have heard it said that the restaurant business is a little bit like being a rock and roll musician in the sense that you do these things if you come to the conclusion that there is absolutely nothing else that you could possibly do. You know, it's crossed everything else off the list.
So we're talking to Matt Strauss from Heirloom Lodge in Housatonic, Massachusetts. So then, after a little experience, you went and got your degree, culinary degree.
I did. I had cooked a lot when I was a teenager. I started working at McDonald's when I was 14, and then I worked in some restaurants in suburban Boston. And then I cooked in Southern California for a minute and had never actually studied cooking, and was lucky enough to find this program in British Columbia at a school called the Pacific Institute of Culinary Arts that was staffed entirely by European chefs. So there was the promise of going up there and really digging into soups and stocks and sauces and all kind of basic stuff, which was exactly what I was interested to learn at that point.
As you learn things from the professionals, the European professionals who taught you, did you come to an inclination that, you know, I knew a lot of these things instinctively even when I was younger?
I think you do become, when you go through a cooking program, you know, cooking is an interesting thing because a lot of people, I remember once a relative of mine said, you know, that everybody has a certain amount of cooking expertise because everybody eats. And that's kind of an interesting question. I think finally that's more or less not the case.
I agree. Some of us do not have it. I'm not allowed in our kitchen.
Yeah. So I think, you know, by the time I landed in cooking school, I had already had a number of years of restaurant experience. And when you work in restaurants, whether you've been to school or not yet, you certainly begin to develop a palate. You begin to develop a sense of proportion. You begin to develop a sense of what a plate should look like and aesthetics, general aesthetics. And so I think certainly when I was there, I didn't go to cooking school until I was about 30 years old.
Yeah.
And by the time I landed there, I had some sense certainly of what I was interested in.
Did you sort of know by that point that, okay, one of my goals here is to open my own place?
At some point right around that time, I became a little by the word that crosses my mind is trapped by the sense that I had to operate my own place. I do remember very keenly going back to Los Angeles after that culinary program finished and looking for a certain restaurant where I knew that I wanted to work. I had a vision for the kind of restaurant that I was looking for, and I spent a few months applying for work in Los Angeles, looking to work in this very particular idea of what I had of this restaurant that I was searching for. It was a combination, I think, probably of three things. It was first and foremost an expression of food that had to do really with my Campanile experience, which was ingredient-driven food that sometimes is called rustic food. The guy that I worked for, who passed away a couple of years ago, Mark Peel, was the head chef at Campanile, and he used to describe rustic food as a plate of food that looks like it fell out of the sky and landed on a table, and ingredients became jostled around a little bit on the plate, but it was the most delicious thing that you ever ate. And that began to seem to me, after working at Campanile and then going through cooking school, like the only kind of food I really wanted to make was food that was made from the best ingredients, that was not handled too much, that was not handled more than it needed to be handled.
What do you mean?
My lead mentor in cooking school used to say to me, I never want to be served a plate of food and have the sense that five pairs of hands touched it.
Oh, interesting.
I don't need my food to be any more manipulated than it needs to be. You know, I want the ingredients to show up there of their own, you know, and sort of speak for themselves and not to be overly manipulated.
Now, forgive me. I've never worked in a restaurant. Yeah. I'm not really a service-oriented person, and it takes a special kind, and I'm not that kind. Mm. But when you're in a restaurant and you're in the line and your bunch of people are working in the restaurant and in the kitchen, don't you all take a shift or one particular job to plate this food, to get this food ready, to prepare this food?
I have worked in restaurants where there were three people working in a particular station putting single individual plates together, you know, sometimes with tweezers. You know, this is certainly an aspect of haute cuisine where chefs get extremely intricate. And I sometimes use the word architectural.
So this is not your scene.
This is not my scene. No, my scene is let's buy the best beans that we can buy, and let's cook them perfectly, and let's plate them, you know, with sliced steak or whatever it is that we're, you know, that we're serving those beans with. But there's no need for great food to involve, you know, tweezers and intricate architecture, I don't think.
We're talking to Matt Strauss of Heirloom Lodge in Housatonic, Massachusetts. All right, we have to take a break here in a minute or two. But fast forward now, how did you begin Heirloom Cafe?
Heirloom Cafe opened in 2010 in San Francisco and was the culmination. I didn't get to finish those other threads, and I'll try to be real concise. So I was looking for to work in a restaurant that had that kind of food, that ingredient-driven rustic food that was juxtaposed with a really serious wine program, because I'm very passionate about wine. And those two things juxtaposed with a really comfortable, somewhat casual dining room. And one of the things that I've discovered over the years is high quality food and really high quality wine almost always go with chandeliers and really fancy linens and all kinds of sort of upcharges in the menu in order to accommodate all those flourishes in the dining room.
Yeah.
And I wasn't interested in any of that stuff. I grew up as a working class kid in suburban Boston. I worked in those places, but I was never comfortable working in those places. So I wanted to bring the particular food that I was interested in and the particular wine that I was interested in a setting where you could wear a flannel shirt and a pair of jeans and be very comfortable.
The number to call here, by the way, as we get rolling with Matt Strauss, is 800-348-2551. All right, Heirloom Cafe open, and we have to take a break.
Sure.
So let's pick it up there, and then we'll hit the emails and the phones, et cetera. 800-348-2551. We have only just begun. It's Farm to Table with Matt Strauss of Heirloom Lodge. We'll be back. Duke Robillard, swinging with Lucy May here on Vox Pop. It's a Food Friday. Before we get back to our chat with Matt Strauss of Heirloom Lodge, I just want to let you know, I was told this morning there are 5 tickets left for the event on Tuesday at the Hart Clewitt Museum, where I'll be there, and the folks from Stair Galleries will be there, and Kathy Sheehan, Rensselaer County historian, and the head honcho at the Hart Clewitt Museum will all be there, and it's going to be a chance for you to have maybe an antique of yours appraised, a verbal appraisal. We're going to make a radio show out of this. God help us. But I'll tell you one thing. There are 5 tickets left. If you want to go, head to WAMC.org right now and click on the link that says WAMC on the road. I can't believe it, but it's going to be a sellout. There you go. All right, 22 minutes after 2 o'clock, it's Food Friday. Matt Strauss, you opened Heirloom Cafe in 2010. You ran it. Did you sell it, or is it now no longer a thing?
No, it's very much a thing. Actually, sometimes I wonder when I hear accounts of people going in there for dinner if it's doing better than it did when I ran the place. You know, it's
Was it tough to get going on your first thing that you owned and was forward facing to the public?
A completely all encompassing experience. You know, I've heard it said that it's the equivalent of I don't have any kids, but I've heard it said that you open a restaurant and it's like having a newborn, and after a year maybe you're not worried about it sleeping on its own, and that's exactly the kind of path that it was in 2010.
Well, so. With the kids though, the worries only get exponentially worse after they can walk. That's the thing. But so you ended up coming back here. Why did you want to cut ties and get back over to the East Coast?
I didn't really want to cut ties. I loved everything. I spent 21 years in California, 8 of them in Southern California, and then 13 in San Francisco. And I loved everything about really both of those cities. And I loved everything about the experience of running Heirloom Cafe. And my greatest hope actually was that Heirloom Cafe was going to not just survive but thrive after I, relocated out to the Berkshires. 2 of my longtime associates at Heirloom Cafe bought most of the restaurant.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So they own most of the restaurant, and I am something like an emeritus owner now of Heirloom Cafe.
Nice.
And it's, it won't surprise you to hear it's my favorite restaurant in San Francisco.
Oh, there you go.
And so I'm thrilled that it's there and doing well. But you asked me why I decided to come back to the side of the country. A question I get, you know, almost every night in the dining room in Housatonic. A few answers. The most important one, I think, is that I have been saying now for a number of years that I am very alarmed by the state of food in the United States outside of cities. I think in urban centers, there are lots of really wonderful restaurants. There are a lot of great markets. There are farmers markets. You know, when you get outside of cities in the United States, you find, I think, huge problems having mostly to do with how widespread the eating of highly processed foods is.
Now, would you place the blame for this on restaurateurs, on supply chain, or on the level of education of the customers?
I think America has real questions when it comes to food culture in general. I think, you know, anyone who has been lucky enough to visit some of these European countries sees in those countries this very deep-seated food culture where food and gathering around a table and seeking out really good ingredients and making time to cook and making time to eat, all of those things are part of those cultures in a way that they're really not very much in American culture.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll get to you in just a moment. Matt Strauss of Heirloom Lodge in Housatonic, Massachusetts, joins us. We haven't even talked about what kind of food you serve at Heirloom Lodge yet, but tell us about this place, this old colonial. Tell us about this, and then we'll get moving here.
Yeah. The building was built in 1797. When we bought it, it was not only the colonial that faces the road, but it had all kinds of architecture behind it. I remember the first thing that I said after I saw the property was that it was hard for me to imagine how we were going to be able to build a restaurant in it. I spoke with an architect who said a very important thing to me, which was, what if you completely gutted the 1797 colonial and then you began to build a new structure off of the back of it to house the kitchen and to take care of all that stuff? And that's what we ended up doing.
Interesting.
So it's a juxtaposition of very old to 1797 to be exact, and then all this modern stuff with an entirely electric kitchen, for instance. And walk-in refrigerator.
Why was an electric kitchen important to you?
A lot of reasons. Number one, the world is having some environmental issues, and I don't think there needs to be a lot more gas. That actually is a reality to such a degree that in New York City, it's my understanding that there will not be any more gas-powered kitchens in the city of New York, which is a major thing that we're not really talking about. Another very, very important reason is that I spent years and years working over gas stoves. Studies are now pretty conclusive that that's not very good for your health. It's not even very good for your health to have a four-burner gas stove in your apartment. Gas stoves have pilot lights that emit a certain amount of gas that's not combusted. It's pretty terrible for your health. So that was the second reason. Another reason is I really wanted to play with induction cooking.
How do you like
it? Stovetop. I love it. My staff loves it. I think I got advice before I made the decision to take the plunge on an induction stove from a chef friend of mine who said, I'll never go back. And I feel the same way now. It's a dream to work with.
All right. So the vibe is 1797, slash modern.
Yeah. Interesting restaurant space for sure. Yeah.
What's the food vibe?
Exactly what I was describing earlier. You know, the things that matter the most to me in the world of food are the greatest fruits and vegetables that are available at the peak of the season. So right now, actually, as I sit here, we're in this very magical time of year when we are not only inundated with tomatoes, but also very beautiful stone fruit. And we have figs coming in soon. And we have all the beautiful baby lettuces that we could want, and everything in the world of green vegetables and Romano beans and just you name it, this is the time of year to be eating. So it's a very happy time for my restaurant because it's exactly what we focus on is all that, all the beautiful, the most beautiful fruits and vegetables.
What happens in March or late February?
Well, the good news for my style and for the stuff that we do at the restaurant is that in addition to being really ingredient-driven and taking a page out of somebody like Alice Waters' book and what is sometimes referred to as California cuisine, I am really also very compelled by what is sometimes called European peasant food. And by that, you know, you're talking about onion soup and cassoulet and really beautiful al forno pastas and gnocchi and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. The quintessential kind of rustic peasant dishes of France and Italy are really compelling to me. So when we at the restaurant move into January and March, first of all, we have a wonderful roasted chicken program. We brine chicken overnight, and then we roast it in a rotisserie, and then we finish it in a combination oven. Do you know what a combi oven is, Ray?
No.
A combi oven is an oven that combines elements of heat and also humidification. So you can cook something with a dial turned to 100% humidity, and theoretically it's almost like cooking it in water. You know, so we finish our chicken in that combi oven after we brush it with a little paprika garlic butter, and it comes out exceedingly,
that
you know, moistened.
Delicious.
Yeah.
But the thing is, man, yeah,
we have that year round.
These combi ovens. Okay, this is something I've done the show a long time.
Yeah.
Is there a water reservoir that you have to keep full, or is there a water feed?
It's plumbed. Yeah, it's fully plumbed.
That's
so there's
amazing.
A water line that goes into the oven, and then there's a drain.
Well,
and
that can't be cheap.
It's incredible. Ours was about $10,000,
but
we got a good deal on it.
Matt Strauss of Heirloom Lodge in Housatonic, Massachusetts, joins us. You've been open, what, about a year and a half now?
Almost. Opened in May of 2024.
And how's it working out for you?
We had a nice summer last summer. The off season in the Berkshires, as I'm sure I don't have to tell your listeners, is an interesting moment of unpredictable weather and not everybody wanting to go out to eat on a Wednesday night. So the off season is an interesting sort of almost monastic experience. And then this summer has been gangbusters. We're extremely busy.
So we'll get to the phones in a moment here, but something you said early struck me. And again, I've never worked in I worked in a deli when I was 16, but it was mainly cutting a couple pounds of pastrami and this and that, not really cooking anything. You worked at McDonald's when you were 14 or 15.
I did.
Were there any lessons learned from that environment that you bring to the current environment?
You know, I was just actually thinking on the way over here today that one of the most important things, people have a tendency these days to use the word chef a lot. Sometimes they say chef tongue in cheek. Sometimes they call their friends chef, or they say yes, chef, because they saw something on television. And I was thinking on the way over here, you know, one of the most important and underrated parts of being a chef is showing up to work every day with the right sensibility and the right outlook and the right mentality, because you're working with a team. And everybody has to not only get along, but kind of thrive together. And I think, you know, the McDonald's experience, which was my first kitchen experience when I was 14, 15, began to plant the seed for me of what it was like to come to work every single day and to put on your uniform and to make food for people and what's involved in that collaboration and in that work shift. My mother said to me a long time ago, one of the amazing things about restaurant work is that when you're done at the end of the day, you perfectly fully understand that you have just worked.
Ah, you know, wisdom right there.
Yeah.
Matt Strauss is our guest from Heirloom Lodge in Housatonic, Massachusetts. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll begin in Monterey, Mass. Robert, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for listening. You have a great show. I have a question for a chef regarding, for a buffet lines, especially for a great amount of people. What is the best approach in getting the best quality to the line? And what is the best way to cook, let's say, to make soup and keep it fresh and not cook it too early in the morning? When lunch is up around 11. So my question is for quality.
Yeah. Well, quality, Robert, thank you for the question. Quality, I think, starts with the skill of the people who are holding the knives and pulling the cutting boards out of the rack. So, of course, that's, I think, the beginning of the answer to your question is that somebody has to have a keen sense for seasoning and for, you know, how the corn gets cooked and et cetera, and how to produce all of the ingredients. After that, you know, I think your question is very provocative because I've always thought that soup in particular is one of the most underrepresented categories in, you know, in every restaurant or eatery in the United States. There's not I used to hear stories when I was a kid about my grandparents having soup parties. They would have a bunch of people come over, and you know, and they would serve 10 different soups or something. So soup is a really wonderful food, and the good news, so far as what you're asking about, is it's pretty easy to hold it. And in fact, it's very often said that soup gets better the following day or the day after that. You know, you make the soup, you cool it off appropriately, and then you bring it back up to temperature, and sometimes it tastes even better. So I'd love to, you know, to encourage you as much as possible to move forward on your soup plan.
Robert.
Great. Thank you. Do you recommend, like, for chicken to brine it, or just marination would be enough?
Well, brining and marinating is just about the same thing. You're just talking about dropping a chicken into a liquid, you know, that usually has some salt and some sugar. I hope I won't too much let the cat out of the bag when I tell you that our brine at Heirloom Lodge involves black tea, which does, I think, lovely things for the flavor of the
meat. Is that a trade secret that you're
it
spilling
was.
Here?
I think that's exactly what it was.
That's all right. Very few. Robert and I are listening, and that's about it. That's fine.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Robert. Thanks, man. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Matt Strauss from Heirloom Lodge in Housatonic, Massachusetts, is here with us. It's 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. So one of my great friends is John Fisher, who just retired from the Culinary Institute.
Yes.
And I like to make him think that I think he's a nitwit, but he's very smart.
Oh.
And here's his comment. Restaurant rules. A friend of mine once said that there's only one rule in the restaurant business, but nobody knows what it is.
I'm curious.
Yeah?
Well, yeah.
Maybe he'll call in and expound.
Maybe he will. There's one rule in the restaurant business, and nobody knows what it is.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't know.
A mystery sandwich.
He was on. We did a cheese show last week. He wrote a book about cheese. And you're a wine guy. Mm. How's the wine list?
The wine list is my pride and joy. It was at Heirloom Cafe. It is at Heirloom Lodge. The thing that separates the wine list, certainly at Heirloom Cafe and increasingly at Heirloom Lodge, is that my singular focus in the world of wine is for maturity.
Mm-hmm.
I love what happens to wine when it gets old. And as a result of that, I have allocated too many resources over the years to buying wine and sitting on it for 10 or 15 years.
Mm, interesting. Yeah. So what happens once a wine's in a bottle?
Yeah.
It's done, right?
No.
It does not age
not
anymore.
At all, no. That is a truth as regards spirits. When spirits are in a bottle, they are finished and they do not evolve any further. But wine is an organic thing from the minute it comes out of the field to the minute that it goes into your mouth. And if there are 20 intervening years between when the wine is bottled and when you drink it, you're having an entirely different experience after 20 years than you would have if you drank that wine in its youth.
I know the answer to this, I think, even though I'm not a wine guy. Does a wine have to be expensive to be really good?
No, it's such a great question. One of my favorite questions. When I started to collect wine, which was about 22 or 23 years ago, it may not surprise you to hear, after we talked about my humble McDonald's origins, I did not have a lot of money when I started collecting wine. And my very favorite thing in terms of my exploration of wine was to plumb this curiosity of whether or not a $15 or $20 bottle of Cote du Rhone or, you know, inexpensive bottle of California Cabernet Sauvignon would age very beautifully. And the unmitigated truth is that it absolutely does.
Huh.
And so I have enjoyed and found gratification over the years in little more than buying a case of wine for $200 or $300, which is $20 or $25 a bottle, and then waiting 10 years for it and offering in the restaurant for $75 or $80 or something, some fair price according to what it costs to put the wine down. And people are, you know, it's just it's a really wonderful thing.
Well, obviously, I mean, having won these awards, you know wine very well. Do you consider yourself, or did you ever consider yourself, a wine snob?
The wine snob thing is a hard, you know, moniker. You know, I think people, I don't know, in this country, wine is so much associated with wealth. Don't you agree with that, or am I wrong about
that? I don't know. I'm neither wealthy nor really like wine, so yeah. I can't tell you the answer to that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not wealthy either, and you know, wine has been one of the central components of my life now, you know, going back until I think probably to Campanile 20, 25 years ago. And it just, you know, as you probably know, a lot of Europeans, for instance, just regard wine as, you know, just another, it's just as important as the water on the table, if not more important.
Yeah.
You know, some Europeans would much rather drink wine with dinner than wine, than water.
Tell you what, we have to take a break here in a moment. Matt Strauss is here from Heirloom Lodge. Before we do, and while we're on the topic of wine and your restaurant, when someone makes a pick of a wine for a particular dish that might raise a red flag for you, do you gently say, well, maybe try this instead?
I used to work with a guy in Los Angeles who used to walk up to tables and say, you want me to tell you what you're going to drink tonight?
That's not good.
And well, they ate it up.
Really?
I watched guests eat.
They
loved it. I had an experience with a couple of guys who were having a celebration dinner a couple of nights ago at the restaurant. And they made it clear to me they wanted to drink something really special. And they settled on a bottle of Corton Charlemagne, which was about $350 on the, you know, it was one of the most expensive wines on the list. And the guy said, you know, I'm thinking I might have the corn soup and I might have the pasta and I might have this and this. And I said, well, if it was me, this is exactly how I would do it. You know, I would start with I would split the soup to start, and then I might have the pasta mid-course, and then maybe we'll have the cheese at the end, you know, with a green salad, and maybe we'll split that steelhead trout, you know, as a mid-course. And, you know, we got into that conversation. I told him exactly how, if I were there sitting and enjoying that bottle of wine, this is what I would do. And they ended up taking that advice. You know, they sat there for 2.5 hours. They had, you know, I know the menu a little bit. I know the wines a little bit. So if somebody wants to talk to me about that, I'm happy to share what my impression is of what they have in mind.
So interesting. Matt Strauss, do you consider yourself an educator?
I would love to be more of an educator, but I run a restaurant, you know, 60 or 70 hours a week. So yeah.
Well, yeah. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Little Jeff Beck. We'll be back. Vox Pop, it's a Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Matt Strauss is here from Heirloom Lodge in Housatonic, Massachusetts. Another CIA prof. We heard from my buddy John, who is retired. Here's another one, Peter, who says, it's so refreshing to hear a genuine professional speaking so thoughtfully about food and food business. I could not agree more with Matt about the rarefied air of pretentious dining. I've been in many of those places versus real great food. Thank you. Also, I say the restaurant business is like combat. If there is any way out, you take it. But if there's no way out, you keep your head down and keep fighting. Sometimes you may not only survive, but be rewarded.
Mm, lovely.
It's the way I look at radio, too. You just keep fighting.
Right.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Let's talk quickly about Kitchen Work Magazine, how that came to be,
sure,
and the foundation as well.
Great. I was lucky enough to be exposed to creative writing when I was in school. And I've been a fan of literary magazines for, you know, since I was in college. And I was at a conference in New York City about 12 years ago that celebrated the little magazine in American culture. And I sat there and I thought, you know, is there an equivalent of this in the food world? Is there a little magazine, you know, some wonderful little literary magazine that deals with food? Of course, there are food magazines that have glossy pages and that are taking photographs of all, you know, the latest and greatest sort of innovation in the world of food. But those magazines are not telling the story about what is going on with food in this country, which,
right,
as I mentioned earlier, is a little bit gnarly, you know. So I thought maybe we could start a little magazine. What could be involved in starting a little magazine and telling some stories, you know, and drawing content from the middle of the country and maybe from other countries and from all kinds of different locales that are telling real stories about food. So that's how Kitchen Work magazine got started, with the first issue in 2016.
Ah, and then the foundation came after that.
Yeah.
And you founded that as well?
I did. Yeah, the Kitchen Work Foundation was founded as a California nonprofit, as I was living, actually just about to relocate from California at the time, but it was founded with the help of an attorney friend in California. And the Kitchen Work Foundation was founded, first of all, to be an umbrella organization to Kitchen Work magazine, and then shortly thereafter took on the motto of encouraging as much fresh, local, delicious food as possible, which is something that I think is missing in our food scene, the encouragement of more fresh, local, delicious food.
Do you think, and we've talked to many a chef about this, in this area. Yeah. Is this area somewhat different? I mean, it seems like there was a lot of farm to table. There are a lot of chefs who work directly with farmers in this area.
Farm to table is an expression. I think Anthony Bourdain lamented the use of the expression farm to table. And I recall him saying, and I won't use his expletive, but where the blank else is my food coming from, if not from a farm, was what Bourdain said.
Okay. So, well, that's simplifying it a little bit.
Well, yes and no. I mean, any restaurant worth its salt is bringing in very fresh ingredients.
Right.
You know, when you see a big truck parked out front that is not only delivering the toilet paper and the broccoli, but also the chicken and the cheddar cheese and every ingredient under the sun, you know that you're dealing with a certain kind of institutional approach to cooking, which is not really what serious food people are talking about. Serious food people are talking about using the best ingredients that they can find. I feel like I didn't answer your question.
No, I think you did very well. Yeah. This is one of the tenets of what you do.
It's completely central to what we do. Yeah, the notion of putting recipes together with, you know, a list of processed unseasonal ingredients is completely uninteresting. And I'm afraid to say, sometimes it seems like that's kind of where we're heading culturally, that we don't, you know, seem to care more about really fresh and wonderful ingredients.
When you have come back, you've been in business almost a year and a half on this side of the country.
Yeah.
Have you developed and are you continuing to develop relationships with some of these local producers of meats and fish?
As much as possible.
Yeah.
You know, we have two great relationships with local, really exceptional produce farms, one of them in Great Barrington, one of them in Stuyvesant, New York. I would love to have more, although, you know, we only have a need to buy right now. Our walk-in refrigerator has three cases of beautiful lettuce in it. I'm not sure, you know, that we're going to end up serving three cases full of lettuce in the next 5 days. So sometimes, you know, you only need the food that you need to run the restaurant, which, unless our friend who called in earlier is serious about his soup kitchen, and then perhaps I can send him some of the lettuce.
Interesting. You know, I got an email here from Kathy who says, I've been listening and hearing about the Heirloom Lodge, so I took a look online. She went online to your website. Your story reminds me of Hoffman House, an old stone house in Kingston, New York, which was originally built in the late 1600s. Remember, Kingston was the original capital of New York State. The place had fallen into disrepair and was revived as a restaurant in 75. Their website has some historic info and photos, and they have fireplaces in most of the rooms. It's lovely to dine there in the winter when they use the fireplaces. I'm interested in old historical buildings and would love to see more about yours on your website. So a critique from a regular correspondent.
Yes.
Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy. I mean, websites are tricky. You know, you try to convey, you know, all kinds of important information, and I think they're as stylistically different as we are as people. And so we try to hit all the chords, and sometimes we will and sometimes
you don't
we
have
won't.
To deal with that, though, right? You have people for that, right?
Which, dealing with the public?
The website. No.
Dealing with the website, I don't know. I mean, social media is, you know, there's a lot of work in actually operating the restaurant. It's hard to keep up on the auxiliary stuff.
Do you consider yourself an artist?
I do. In fact, my dad said something that at the time I thought was a little disparaging some years ago. When I said, you know, I don't know about the business. He said, you're not really a business person, my father said to me. This is when I was 4 or 5 years deep into running my own restaurant. He said, you're not really a business person. You're an artist mostly who is trying to figure out a way to make it work, you know, in the business world. And I think he was probably right.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And, you know, I've talked to many a chef who is super genius like you, but business is a different animal.
Different mindset. I wouldn't be surprised to hear somebody who understands brain chemistry to say that it's different parts of the brain.
Left, right.
Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Matt Strauss of Heirloom Lodge in Housatonic, Massachusetts. There are going to be hotel rooms there at some point?
The property was bought and originally designed to be to follow the model of something that Europeans call an agriturismo. And an agriturismo, I think most prominently in Italy, but also a little bit in Spain, can be a lot of different things. But primarily, it's a place where you can go have a really nice dinner in the middle of an agricultural area where there might not be a lot of other commercial activity or even restaurants. And not only can you have a really nice dinner there and perhaps drink a bottle of wine, but you also have a place to sleep. So you show up in the afternoon, they give you a key, you check into your room, you make a reservation for dinner, you show up at the dining room at 6:30, you have a beautiful dinner, and then you go up to bed and you don't have a lot of choices, but it's such a beautiful part of the world. So this agriturismo thing was very inspiring to me when I stayed at one for the first time in 2013 in northern Italy. And I thought, you know what, I think I would enjoy operating a place like this, you know, with having travelers come through and making them a beautiful dinner and serving a beautiful bottle of wine and then being able to lodge them.
When you bought this place,
yeah,
and you had this in your mind, presumably, did you think it would be a while before the hotel or the lodging part actually took life?
You never know, you know, about what a time frame is going to look like. We ended up having a couple of years worth of, I'll call it for your listeners, due diligence with our neighbors and people who were very interested to vet the work that we intended to do there. So it took us a minute to get off the ground. And now it has taken us, you know, a couple of seasons to really get our legs under us as far as the restaurant is concerned. And I think we're in good shape now, looking forward to figuring out how to get some lodging on the property.
Did I detect a slight sneer with that, or do you have good relations with your neighbors?
We have wonderful relationships with the neighbors now, but I from the beginning they were. I'll just say that they were concerned. Our neighbors were concerned. We're on a country road. It's exceedingly quiet where we are. It's an exceedingly beautiful property, and I have to say, Ray, I didn't blame them. From the beginning, I now live in the country. Part of the appeal of living in the country is that you don't have a Ferris wheel, you know, next to your house. At all
When's
hours.
When's the Ferris wheel going in?
There's no plans for a Ferris wheel.
Okay.
You know, working too busy. We're working too much on the wine cellar. You know, to be worried about the Ferris wheel.
All right, fair enough. Matt Strauss is our guest from Heirloom Lodge. 800-348-2551 is the number. Quickly, and just give me a highlight reel of what's on the menu right now.
Well, I fell in love some years ago in the Bay Area with a tomato called an Early Girl tomato, which is a bright red tomato that is almost perfectly round and is very reliable when it comes to yield and flavor, and it's just an exquisite tomato. We are now lucky enough to be working with a farmer who is growing Early Girl tomatoes for us a couple of weeks ago at long last, because the tomato season has not been a great season in western Massachusetts this year on account of the rain in the spring, and it was a little cool. And
yep.
So tomatoes got a late start, but we're now, as of the last 2 or 3 weeks, working with a tomato panzanella salad, which is beautiful garlic croutons with slices of Early Girl tomatoes and some feta cheese and this savory vinaigrette that we're making with capers and roasted fennel and olive oil. And so that's one of quite a number of people, it won't surprise you to hear, going for the tomato salad.
Nice.
As we all know in the Northeast, we get, you know, 6 or 8 weeks with with that experience of the tomatoes. We are now also serving, not this is the only other place on the menu where tomatoes appear, but we're serving one of my favorite dishes that we started serving 15 years ago at Heirloom Cafe in San Francisco, which is we used to serve it with wild salmon if we could get it. We're now serving it with steelhead trout, which is very similar to salmon. And it's a piece of trout that is served sauce béarnaise, you know, béarnaise yeah. sauce, everybody knows. Béarnaise sauce goes down on the bottom of the plate, and then we serve on top of the béarnaise sauce some crispy fingerling potatoes that are mixed with sun gold tomatoes, those beautiful little orange cherry tomatoes. And then the trout goes on top of the potatoes and the tomatoes with the béarnaise, and then we throw a little shallot vinaigrette over the top of the fish.
Nice.
And that is one of my favorite dishes that I have ever served as a professional, and I'm now probably in my 14th or 15th year of serving that dish, and it comes around as soon as sun gold tomatoes are in season.
This dish to me sounds like it requires some finesse. Are you a control freak in the kitchen? Can you delegate?
Our kitchen is as wide open as a professional kitchen could possibly be. It is a large kitchen, and it is completely exposed to the dining room. And one of the things that people sometimes remark on when they sit at the counter in front of our kitchen is how calm the kitchen is. And that is a matter of figuring out the right systems and figuring out which person is performing which task and how the flow of the menu works and keeping people from being overwhelmed. These are all very crucial aspects of running a professional kitchen.
You know, I find it so interesting, the open kitchen. You said performing, but do those working for you and you, do you feel that you are performing at times? People are watching.
I think we all do. And I think, as I think you mentioned earlier, you said something about it takes a certain kind of person. And it certainly takes a certain kind of person to want to stand in a wide open kitchen and be making food for people while they're watching you make the food. There's no question it's not for everybody. But the people who are there with me now are extraordinary and I think are completely thriving and having a lot of fun doing it.
All right. A few more items from – we have about a minute and a half here with Matt Strauss of Heirloom Lodge. Just an item or two more from your menu, the current.
Yeah.
What you're planning for the fallow time of the year when there aren't many things coming up from the ground, and sort of your plans for the future.
What do you want to talk about first? Winter menu?
No, just finish up. Well, give me one more from your current menu.
I'll tell you a dish that we're playing with now is one of our dear friends in Great Barrington. His name is Matt Rubiner, runs a cheese shop, a very famous cheese shop in Great Barrington. And he brings in this magnificent Gorgonzola cheese from this particular Italian producer that we love. And we got to talking in the kitchen a couple of days ago about what would happen with the Gorgonzola with some beautiful Black Mission figs when figs come into season.
Yeah.
So we've been playing around with a Gorgonzola and fig salad.
Cool.
That's probably likely to land in the next couple of weeks.
All right. And then in the winter, what happens? We have about 45 seconds.
In the winter, we serve onion soup and braised greens and braised meat and beautiful potato dishes. And
can you keep it local or ish?
And a beet salad that I love that I've been serving for years. Can we keep it localish? Less than we can in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing growing in the winter, so it's more difficult in the winter to be working locally.
All right, Matt Strauss, we're almost out of time here. You can have one more pearl of wisdom if you wish, and then tell us how to find your website and your restaurant.
Well, the Heirloom website is heirloomlodge.com. The Kitchen Work Foundation website, which is going to have our film coming out from our residency award in April, is a wonderful website and a great place to go. It's kitchenworkfoundation.org. And I think, the thing that I live my life for and the reason that I'm working in this industry is to try to support culinary work, which I think is so very important for a civil society. And I hope that we can figure out ways in the years coming up to support people who are making food a little bit more than we are now.
Matt Strauss, well done, sir. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Support comes from Testa's Pantry, Schenectady, celebrating 8 years of procuring olive oils and balsamics from curated producers selected by the Testa family to meet their exacting standards. Testa'sPantry.com. The Devlin Inn and Suites, Main Street, Lake Placid, welcoming families, athletes, and groups to the historic Olympic Village with Adirondack Mountain views and dog-friendly accommodations. TheDevlinNY.com to learn more. And Real Pickles, a worker-owned cooperative in Greenfield, Massachusetts, producing organic fermented vegetables sourced from Northeast farms and found throughout the Northeast, realpickles.com. Thanks again to Matt Strauss of Heirloom Lodge. Now remember, there are links to his restaurant and links to the foundation and the magazine right on our page at WAMC.org. Just click on today's Vox Pop show. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. All right, that's it for the week. Have a splendid weekend. We'll see you Monday at 2 for Medical Monday.